I'm going to talk about Pyrmon. This is a project that I worked on with two of my undergraduate students, Yanis Liebix and Ross Greenwood, and also our head sysadmin in the computer science department, Jeff Nur. And so what we did is we built a peer-to-peer performance monitoring tool. And this is a tool that's designed for what I'm calling general-purpose network systems. So I want to start out by defining what I mean by that. These are systems that are normally run in small organizations, academic departments. They typically consist of a single local area network system. And features of the system are that really each machine on the network, its resources are primarily under the control of its own operating system. So the operating system on each node schedules processes, schedules access to different devices on that node. There's some system-wide sharing. Typically, there's a network file system. There might be some resources connected to the network, like printers. But primarily, each node independently schedules its own resources. So there's no centralized scheduler like you might see in cluster systems. And what we see in our system and what other studies have reported is there tend to be large imbalances in these systems. Users tend to statically pick nodes. I always work on the node in my office. We have teaching labs. Students tend to work at the same machine in the lab over and over again. I may write an MPI host file. I write it once, and I just run over and over and over again on the same set of nodes. And so the result of this is that there's often large imbalances that we see in resource usage. We have some nodes may be completely idle while others are completely overloaded. We could see swapping on some nodes while other nodes have an enormous amount of free RAM space. We can see large variations in CPU load across machines. And then there's also large variations in contention for different devices as well. The effects of this are that applications can perform poorly if they just happen to be placed on the wrong machines. Certainly for sequential applications, you can get poor response rate if the machine is heavily loaded, or slower execution times for batch jobs. For parallel applications, typically an application's runtime is determined by the slowest process. So if you have an MPI application running across some of the nodes in this network, if one of those processes happens to be placed on a slow node, the entire application is going to slow down significantly. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to do better. We wanted to come up with a way to better balance load in these types of systems. We wanted a way for users to be able to quickly identify the best nodes in the system and then be able to run their jobs or place their processes or SSH into those nodes. With this, we could get some kind of load balancing in our system and potentially avoid the problems with the imbalances that we've seen. However, we have to still fit within the constraints of the system. We're not building a centralized scheduler like one might see in a cluster. This is still a general-purpose network system. Operating systems on each node still completely control scheduling of processes and scheduling of resources. So we designed a system called Pyrmon, and Pyrmon is a peer-to-peer resource monitoring system. Each node runs a Pyrmon process, a Pyrmon daemon, and that daemon process contains information about all the other nodes in the system, so system-wide resource usage information about every other node. We wanted our system to be fast, to provide this information quickly, so by each local node providing system-wide information, users of this information can just access their local node. They don't have to go out over the network to try and collect system-wide resources. We also wanted a system that was fault-tolerant, so the peer-to-peer design lends itself to that, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. And then something that's low overhead. This is something that's going to run on our system all the time. It runs on our system right now. I think it's running right now as long as our system is up. And so the peer-to-peer design really lends itself to that. We also designed this really as a layered architecture. The Pyrmon part of it just does the collection and distribution of system-wide resource monitoring data. Higher-level services then are built on top of PeerMon, and they can use this data to do whatever. We're interested in load balancing, so we built some higher-level services to do load balancing in the system. Here's a closer look at the PeerMon architecture. Each node, again, runs a daemon process. It's a multi-threaded process. Two of the threads, the listener thread and the sender thread, are responsible for the communication over the peer-to-peer network. They're going to receive system-wide information from other peers in the system, and they're going to disseminate their system-wide information to other peers in the system. The client interface thread, then, is the way that this local PeerMon daemon is going to export its system-wide information to users. Users typically meaning programs. So one example program, and I'll talk about this later, is Smarter SSH. This is a program that users can run, and it gets PeerMon data. It finds the best node in the network, and SSH is the user into that node. So a slightly closer look at the sender and listener threads. The listener thread is responsible for receiving information from other nodes about the system. And as it receives these messages, it may update its own local state. Each message is associated with a logical timestamp. So if the listener thread receives information about a node that's newer than the information it has locally, it updates its local information. If not, it ignores that. The sender thread is then responsible for disseminating its information in the peer-to-peer system. Currently, we pick three. Each time the sender thread wakes up, collects information about the local node through /proc interface we're using, and it selects three peers in the system to send its entire hash map state to. So this is a state about the entire system, what it thinks the entire system state looks like right now. For both of these, the sender and the listener thread, we use UDP. So we can send out very quickly. We only have to have a single socket, two sockets really, one for the sender thread, one for the listener thread, versus if we use TCP and had one socket per connection. And it turns out it's okay that we don't have reliable delivery. If we drop a packet once in a while, it's not a big deal. And the reason for that is we wanted to look at really what constraints we have on this system-wide resource usage information. And it is impossible for every node to instantaneously have the exact same snapshot on the system. There certainly are very complicated, expensive algorithms for collecting a consistent snapshot and for making sure that nodes have a consistent view of the data. But our observation is that this isn't really necessary. As long as each node has relatively accurate information, as long as the information it has about other nodes is fairly new, it's just as good as if we, you know, tried to make a consistent view, right? So because PeerMon is just doing the data collection here, we're not determining how the higher level service needs it. If there's a higher level service that service that wants to be the absolute authority for some resource scheduling in the system, then what it could do is just pick one of the PeerMon peers as the authority of the view of the state of the system and use its data as the view of the system data. And this is really no different than how centralized systems based on SNMP work. There's one authority. Certainly the SNMP server also doesn't have an instantaneous view of the system. It's got some information. Once a client sends it, then its state changes. So it's really no different. Let me just briefly say why we send to three peers. Each time the sender thread sends to three peers, what we're looking for is some balance here, some trade-off between how new the data is that each node is receiving versus how many resources we're using. And so here what I'm showing you is the average data rate age. Age is in units of instances of the sender thread sending out information versus the number of peers that we send to in the first graph. And if we send to two peers, the average data age is a little bit older. If we send to four, it's better. Three, we get something in the middle. Four isn't that significantly better than three. And then if we look at data bandwidth, certainly if the sender sends to more peers each time, we're using up more network bandwidth. And so these are estimates for a 500-node system. We decided that three gives us a good balance between relatively recent information and not using a lot of network bandwidth. So the third part of the Peermon process is the client thread, and this is where the higher level services interact with Peermon. For this interface, we use TCP. This is an uncommon interface, so having the extra overheads of maintaining a connection locally is not a huge hit. And the key here is that for most services in these types of systems, they can just interact with their local peer. So the Peermon peer running on their local machine, they don't have to go over the network to get system-wide resource usage information. So it's very fast. When we start up peers in this system, each peer process, when it starts up, it reads the IPs of three other peers from a config file. And the sender thread will start sending this new node's information to these three peers. As long as one of these other three nodes eventually runs a Peermon process, this node will start receiving information about other nodes in the system. So the first phase usually is the new node sends its information to these three peers. One of those three peers, if it's up, will send information about the entire system, what it knows about the entire system, to this new node. And now this new node will have really the entire information about the entire system. In practice, our peer-to-peer network is really 100% connected. So every node knows about every other node. So our system is also very fault tolerant. If a node fails, or if a Peermon process on a node fails, or if the network becomes partitioned in some way, this node's data will slowly age out of the system, or quickly age out of the system, depending on how quickly the sender thread sends data around. And so this will no longer be a node that higher level services choose as one of the best nodes to use for their service. When a node comes back up, when we restart the Peermon process, it just enters the system just like regular startup. There's no consistency requirements on the data, so it can just start receiving data about the system just like it did before. There's no lost data to recover here. So recovery is very quick. It's just like startup. So that's the basic design of Peermon. Peermon does the resource data collection part. I want to talk about three tools that we built on top of Peermon. So these are using the client interface of Peermon. And these are tools that are going to perform some load balancing in our system. This was the original motivation for why we developed this tool. The first tool is called Smarter SSH, and it uses Peermon data to pick the best node in the system to SSH into. The second tool is called Auto MPI Gen. It's very similar to Smarter SSH, except for instead of SSHing into the best node, it's going to generate an MPI host file containing the best N nodes in the system and specified by the user how many hosts you want in your host file. And then the final use is dynamic DNS mapping. I'm not going to talk a lot about this. The paper has more details about how we set this up. Basically, what we're doing is we periodically have a process that runs. It gets the N best machines from Peermon. Currently, we're picking five, but it's configurable depending on the size of your network. And then we change the dynamic DNS binding, so the set of machines that Bind uses to round robin through for remote SSH. So students can SSH into cslab.cs.swarthmore.edu, and they'll be placed on one of these best machines. Right now, we have it set up so that we change the set of machines every minute or so, and we have five machines. Again, we have about a 50-node network in our system. What's one thing that's really nice about this is we don't have to do anything if a node fails in our system. So if one of the nodes that's in the set fails, it's going to be replaced the next time. It's going to age out of the system. It's not going to be the best node. So when users SSH in, the SSH isn't going to hang because the node is unreachable. We also can, in times of really low use of our resources, we can shut down machines to save energy, and we don't have to go in and by hand change any of our DNS mappings. Right? These machines will just age out of the system, and they won't be one of the possible targets. So let me talk a little bit more about Smarter SSH and Auto MPI Gen. These are written as Python programs. They're pretty simple Python programs. And again, they use the Puremon client TCP interface. They have command line options for different runtime behavior, one of which is specifying how to order nodes. So you can order nodes currently based on CPU load alone, based on available RAM alone, and then the default is a combination of both available RAM and CPU load. We use a delta value in ordering these so that small variations, insignificant differences in like RAM load aren't deemed significant. Nodes with just small variations are weighted equally or considered equal. Also, Smarter SSH randomizes the order of equal nodes so that two quick invocations of this will actually distribute the load across the current set of best machines. So here's just some output from a couple runs of this. I realize this might be a little difficult to see. We wrote a simple script around the call to the Python interpreter, so users in our system just run Smarter SSH. The first run, here I'm showing you command line options that tell Smarter SSH just to list out the information, so it's not going to actually SSH into the best node. And in this example, I'm using the default ordering, which is by a combination of CPU load and free RAM. And here we can see that our machine Sesame up at the top is the best machine. It has more memory than the next three, and a relatively small CPU load. We can see that Myrtle at the bottom actually has a lot more memory, but its CPU load is higher, so it was ranked lower. The second run in the middle, here I'm telling SSH to list out the top five machines and order them just based on CPU load. So it's ignoring the amount of free memory here. And here we can see that the two machines with basically zero CPU load, molasses and turmeric, are ordered best. And in fact, they're equal. But in this case, because Smarter SSH randomizes equal nodes, it just picked molasses as being number one and turmeric as being number two. The final run, I'm just running Smarter SSH how users would normally use it, although I'm specifying SSH order by CPU load. And here what's happening is we're SSHing into turmeric, which was one of the two best nodes that we saw previously. So typically, users in our system just run Smarter SSH. They use the default ordering, and then they get placed on the best node. So we built these tools, and then one question we want to ask is, how much does this help? Right? We wanted to do better load balancing in these types of systems. Did we do it, or can we do it with these tools? What we did is we ran three benchmark programs. Each benchmark program is designed to stress test a different type of resource usage. The first was a memory-intensive sequential program. So it's a program that mallocs up a bunch of memory and then reads and writes to it. The second is a CPU-intensive program. It's an OpenMP implementation of the game of life. It runs on a single node, but it's going to use all the cores on a single node. And the final application is an MPI application. It's going to run on 8 of 50 nodes in our system, and it's both RAM and CPU intensive, as well as using the network. We ran experiments comparing choosing a randomly selected node or nodes on which to run these benchmark programs, and then using Piermon data, either SmarterSSH or AutoMPI Gen, and looking at the three different ordering criterion that we have now based on CPU load only, RAM, available RAM only, and the combination. So I'm showing you speed up results here. In each column is one of the benchmark programs, and each row shows the different ordering criteria of the Piermon data based on CPU only, RAM only, or the combination. And what these data show is that using Piermon significantly improves program performance. We're seeing speed ups of up to 4.6 for some of these applications. And only in the case when we use a really bad ordering criteria for the application. So when we order nodes only looking at their CPU load and we're running a memory intensive program, do we see sort of Piermon not helping? And that makes sense because Piermon might pick nodes that have not a lot of RAM space for this because it's not even looking at those. The other thing that's interesting here is that the ordering criterion that uses a combination of CPU and RAM works best. And maybe this isn't really surprising. Most applications need both some CPU time and some RAM space to run efficiently. And so this is part of the reason why we use this as the default ordering in our system. I think I'm running a little short on time, so I won't talk about this a lot, but we did run a scalability study. We wanted to see how well Piermon could scale to larger size systems. To do this, we ran multiple instances of Piermon on each node, and we collected how much CPU, RAM, and network bandwidth it was using. Basically, CPU and RAM usage remain constant for as the network size grows. The network bandwidth increases slightly because each Piermon peer is sending out information about every other node in the system. So as the network size grows, that amount of data gets bigger. It grows linearly with the size of the network. And really, for a 2,200 node system, we're only using a fraction of the network bandwidth on our gigabit system. So our conclusion is that it scales very well, certainly for the types of systems we're targeting. So Piermon, again, it's a peer-to-peer network or resource monitoring system. It just does the resource monitoring part. So we've developed a layered architecture here where it does the resource monitoring in a peer-to-peer way. It's designed to be low overhead, scalable, fault tolerant. And it's designed for higher level load balancing or really other purposes in local area network systems. Certainly, you could add anything to the payload in these peers. It doesn't have to be resource usage information. But that's what we're using it for. I've shown that building tools that we built on top of this really can significantly improve performance. We can actually do some good load balancing in our type of target systems. So in the future, one thing we'd like to do is we plan to release a version of Piermon, including SmarterSSH and any other tools that we've built. Because we're an undergraduate institution, we can primarily work on things during the summer. So we're anticipating that we're going to release this next summer, this coming summer. We have a web page set up for this, and you could certainly take a look at that. We also want to further investigate some security and scalability issues. There's no fundamental reason why Piermon couldn't run on larger networks that span multiple domains that are multiple local area networks, but there's some security issues that we would need to resolve before we could do this. We also want to implement an easier use client interface than TCP sockets, and we plan to do that with the release. And we want to build more tools. We want to see how else we can use this. So I'm happy to take any questions.
Alvin Couch, Tufts University. I'm interested in how you actually bootstrap the process, because it looks like you have lots of little configuration files, one per agent, and I wonder how you create them.
Okay, so the paper actually has really gory details about this, and the website does as well. What we do is in initd, we have a script to start, stop, restart, Piermont. Whoops, I'm changing my slides here. And so at startup, we start the Piermont daemon. It runs as a regular user, so it doesn't run as root. We change the UID of it. We also have a cron job that periodically runs, checks to see if Piermont's still running, and if not, it reruns the start script.
Hi, Marcia Getch from Channing Lab. Did you run into any issues with race conditions?
So there aren't any issues with race conditions. In the paper, we talk about a different client interface that we've gotten rid of since we wrote the paper, which was a file-based interface. So each Piermont daemon would write its hash map data to a file, and then clients could just open and read that file, which is easier to use than TCP, but there's clearly a race condition there. Because we're not trying, we don't care about absolute correctness or consistency at each node of the data, there really isn't a race condition. Now, internally, we've got this hash map data structure, and so we've got locks around read and write accesses to that so that the client thread isn't trying to read data out of that as the listener thread is updating it.
I was also thinking that if node A was suddenly not busy, everyone would try and get on it all at once.
Yes. That's possible. If someone on every node is simultaneously starts smarter SSH, and if every node has the same data, and they all rank A as the best, yeah. But for the types of applications we're looking at, that is an important. And if that is important for your high level service, again, the high level service can choose one Piermont daemon to interact with, and it can decide how it uses that data for the service.
Okay.
Yeah, so we haven't done a study of maybe how inconsistent the data is among peers, although the looking at the average data age is an estimate of that. My answer to that is we have a layered system, and Piermont's just giving you these data, just like a centralized system might. And then the higher level system can decide what to do with that. So like for smarter SSH, it randomizes the order of equally good nodes, and it uses these small deltas so that it's not always picking the best node to try and do some sort of distribution there.
Oh,
okay. Well, yeah, I'd like to hear more about that.